You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
During his acting years, Charlton Heston was one of the most successful leading men in American movies, starring in epics like Ben-Hur, El Cid, and Ten Commandments, science fiction adventures like Planet of the Apes and The Omega Man, and even an art film or two like The Touch of Evil. The Film Society of Lincoln Center is revisiting some of his more memorable performances in a series called Cinematic Atlas, The Triumphs of Charlton Heston, featuring 11 new and archival prints, August 29th through September 4th. And joining me now to discuss his remarkable career are his daughter, Holly Heston, and Hollywood producer Walter Seltzer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And you live in New York, Holly, so this is not going to be a big trip for you to go over to the Walter Reed Theater. It's tonight? Does it start tonight?
It actually starts tomorrow, and it is going to be a joy for me because I have the opportunity to take my two children, who are 8 and 11, to see their grandfather on the big screen. Many of these films came out before they were born, and it'll be a wonderful opportunity for us together as a family.
And some of these are newly struck prints.
Absolutely.
So they'll look really terrific. Walter, when did you first work with Charlton Heston? Walter, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, hi, Walter. When did you first work with Charlton Heston?
Well, I met him in at the airport when he arrived in California in 1950.
Oh, so you knew him from the beginning.
From the very beginning. I was the first guy out here to know him.
Uh-huh. And you worked with him on and off throughout the years?
On and off until the very, very end.
Holly, how far along in his career was he when you were born?
Well, he had already been extremely successful. He had already made Ben-Hur and the Ten Commandments and El Cid. I came in right in after that, and I know Walter has very happy memories of my parents bringing me over to show their new little daughter off. And we've had a very warm and loving relationship for a very long time.
Did he talk? Go ahead, Walter.
Yes, indeed, we have. I remember Holly being brought to our house at Christmas time, shortly after she arrived.
So you were kind of a Christmas present.
Yes, absolutely.
For everybody.
Did your father talk about what got him into acting?
Well, you know, he talked a lot about how awkward he felt as a young man growing up. He never really felt as though he fit in. He was a real bookworm and loved to escape in books as a child. And I think it was something that he just sort of fell into and happened to be good at. And it actually, you know, one step led to another, and it was a success for him.
But unlike a lot of actors, he seemed to prefer movies to the stage.
No, actually not. He loved the stage, and I think the reason why he loved the stage so much was that he had that immediate contact, that response from the audience. He loved being able to, every night, do a little bit better, to recognize the mistakes and improve on it every day, and the camaraderie with the behind-the-scenes team of people as well as the actors. He loved the camaraderie. He loved the creativity of theater.
So how much theater was he able to do?
He did an enormous
amount.
Because
he did an awful lot of film work.
He did a lot of film work, and he really fit in as much theater work as he possibly could. I know he did a lot in his early career here in New York City, and then later on he did enormous amount at the Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles.
Walter, he played a lot of larger-than-life characters, Moses and the Ten Commandments, a princely gladiator in Ben-Hur, Michelangelo in The Agony and the Ecstasy. Why do you think directors like to cast him in those huge roles?
Because he had the character for it, he had the appearance for it, and he had the ability to make people believe that he was that character. To further something that Holly was saying before, you know, Chuck could have had a career as an artist, as a writer, as a raconteur, if he had decided not to become an actor.
So did that make him a natural for Michelangelo? He actually knew how to hold a paintbrush?
He did indeed. He knew how to hold one and to wield one.
Did he talk about that with you, Holly?
Yeah, I mean, he...
Because you've also been in the arts.
Yeah, he passionately loved works of art. He appreciated architecture. He loved Michelangelo primarily because of his detailed work on the physical body, which is a really hard thing to do. I mean, it's not easy to draw the human body and make it look real. And
Chuck could do that, though, yeah, Holly, remember?
Yeah. He could, and he loved it, and he's constantly sketched. If he didn't have a novel in one hand, he would have a sketchbook in the other, waiting for scenes to be set up. And he would, even at parties at Walter's house, he would, you know, take a sketch pad, and he'd be sketching somebody sitting down having a cocktail and talking with someone else.
He starred in Orson Welles' Touch of Evil, which is considered by many to be one of the great movie classics, but it's also something that we normally wouldn't expect him to have been in. Was he the one who actually suggested that Orson Welles direct the film? Walter?
Yes, I think it was Chuck's not only suggestion but insistence that resulted in the picture being made.
Did he have that much control on what directors or other actors were in the movies he was in?
The star always had a lot of influence. Control, not 100%, but influences is the better word.
We have a clip from that film, one of my favorites, even though I think this is one of the less scary parts, or at least I hope it is.
Marcus, don't worry.
Why should I worry?
You go right ahead and say anything you want to. Folks will bear your natural prejudice in mind.
I saw that shoebox 10 minutes ago,
yeah,
Captain.
Well, maybe you didn't notice.
I knocked it over on the bathroom floor. I couldn't very well have failed to notice 2 sticks of dynamite.
Tell any story you want,
Marcus. The shoebox was empty.
Go on saying it's empty. Folks will understand.
I'm saying more than that, Captain. You framed that boy.
Framed him!
Holly, do you remember what your father's experience was in that film, working with Orson Welles?
You know, my father loved working with creative people. And any opportunity that he had to work with someone who had a reputation like Orson Welles, he took it.
Well, he must have been upset when Welles lost control of the film, as he seemed to
yes.
have a habit of doing. The studio re-edited it. Did he fight for Welles' cut?
Yes, he did. I mean, I think the problem is that actors only have a certain amount of control, and the studios have the last word. I think he was very pleased that it was finally recut the way that Orson wanted it. I mean, Orson had a reputation of being difficult, but also being creative. He was sort of a tortured soul.
That re-edit occurred a few years back, and when people saw it, they wondered why had the film been mangled the way it had. Not that it didn't turn out to be pretty great, even in its mangled version, but Welles' version, especially with that amazing opening shot, was extraordinary.
Well, I don't think they understood his creativity. I think that I had a history teacher who said, you know, the time and the man must conjoin. And I think maybe Orson was a little bit before his time. I think the studios were so used to sort of doing package stuff that this incredible creative genius came through and they just didn't know how to manage it.
I'm talking with Holly Heston, daughter of Charlton Heston, and with Hollywood producer Walter Seltzer, who was also one of Charlton Heston's best friends. And Walter, you produced The Omega Man. Why did you decide to change the title from I Am Legend to The Omega Man? Did you think that Will Smith might need that title somewhere down the line?
No, that didn't enter into our consideration at the time. No, because someone else owned the title at that time.
Uh-huh. So
the picture had been made before.
Oh, this was a remake of
a remake of the original.
He was the only actor in many scenes in that film.
Yes.
And that always presents difficulty for actors because so much of acting is often bouncing off of the other actor.
That is correct. It's very difficult to be solo. Ask Tom Hanks. You know, he did it for an entire mm-hmm. picture. But Omega Man was difficult, and Chuck and the director Boris Segal, all of us had to join in to create things that made for the action.
The premise of the movie is that a virus has killed off most of the people on Earth, and it was shot in an abandoned Los Angeles. How were you able to make the city look so empty?
With great difficulty. We shot the city on Sundays from a rooftop in a downtown building, department store, the May Company. And we had the cooperation of the city traffic department to shut off traffic, and we were able somehow to convey the idea that the city was empty. It worked pretty well, I thought.
Well, he seemed to enjoy doing things in films with dystopic themes, not just The Omega Man, also Soylent Green.
Soylent we did as well. Yeah, with the same, Chuck and I shared an opinion that one of the great problems of the world, unchecked population, overpopulation. And we hit on that theme in a couple of pictures.
Holly, did you watch him prepare for roles?
Yes. He always seemed to be preparing for a role. And I don't know whether, the role really happened or not. He was always learning, reading, creating. The man was just a constant font of knowledge and energy. And it came very easily to him because he loved to learn.
But also for somebody who you say felt uncomfortable in his own body when he was younger, here's this guy who had to ride horses a lot in any number of films. We see him driving that chariot in Ben-Hur. I don't know how much driving he actually did, but some of those scenes, it's obvious that
he actually did a lot. He trained for 3 months.
Yeah,
for three months.
He did a number of his own stunts.
Yes.
So I guess painting and sculpting in The Agony and The Ecstasy was one of the easier roles.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Walter, it must have been challenging for him to go from film to film as he did. In 1971, he was working to get Antony and Cleopatra made at the same time that he was making The Omega Man. Was that the way Hollywood worked in those days?
Chuck was unusual. He had a multifaceted mind, and he was able to see ahead, and he could do several things at one time.
One of the things that some actors would like to have more of is script approval. Did it help that, in your case, you were a friend and you were the producer of the film?
Yeah, we could talk things out, as in the case of Will Penny, for instance. We started with 20 pages that Tommy Grise, the author, had written, and I liked them. I was very enthusiastic about them, and I took them over to show Chuck, and he said, great, let's greenlight it. Let's do it. Let's have Tommy complete the screenplay, and then we'll give it to Wyler and to Stevens and see whom we can get to direct. And I said, no, forget the whole thing then, because the package is Tommy. Tommy Grise is going to write it, and the only way he'll give it to us is if he can direct. And Chuck said, well, as I was saying, when we get Tommy to direct it, we'll...
he had a sense of humor, and yet, Holly,
he
didn't do any comedies. Why do you think that is?
He had such a wonderful sense of humor, and Walter will also reinforce that. He loved the comics, and, you know, it's too bad he didn't do more comedy, and I think people just didn't offer it to him. I think they saw him as a very different kind of person. He made himself known in more serious roles, and people just thought, oh, he can't do comedy, but he could.
He was a sensational raconteur. And he had a great store of stories. Some were a little sharp.
Like John Wayne, many people will remember Charlton Heston in a political context. He changed over the years. He supported the candidacies of Adlai Stevenson and JFK. He served as president of the Screen Actors Guild. What led him to become more conservative as he got older?
The years.
You mean the way America was changing, or just the way he was changing?
The passing years. No, I think both the way the country was changing and as he evolved.
I agree with that. I mean, I think, my father was always a true, loyal American. He loves this country everything that it stands for. And as a child, both my brother and I were taught that you got to stand behind what you believe in. And whether it's popular or not, you need to fight for what you believe in. And that's what he did. And whether, you know, I thought it was the right thing or not was really not the point. The point was is that he was my father. He had an opinion. He was an American. He was free to make choices. And as a family, we supported one another.
He also supported the National Endowment for the Arts and worked a lot for film preservation.
Absolutely. He was dedicated to the things that he believed in, and they weren't necessarily Republican or Democratic. They were just issues that he felt strongly about and supported.
Did he ever talk about favorite roles? Did he have any? Do you know?
I think that he thought Will Penny was probably his favorite role.
Well, of course, he liked all the films that he did with you, Walter.
He did, but Walter's right. He loved Will Penny, and I don't know if Walter will agree with me. I think he saw so much of himself in that character, the exterior of a very strong, capable person facing old age, facing the passage of time, and also recognizing his own frailties, that in fact the exterior is one thing, but really the interior is what came out of that character, the person inside, and how deep and sensitive and fragile.
And Will Penny.
Absolutely, and being able to come to grips with it and handle it.
And Will Penny is one of the films featured in this series called Cinematic Atlas, The Triumphs of Charlton Heston, on view at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater tomorrow through September 4th. For more information, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to Holly Heston and Walter Seltzer
my pleasure.
For coming by and talking
about
Holly.
It.
Thank you, Walter.
Love you, baby.
Love you back.
Right.